I'm here with Dungeons & Dragons creative manager and DM to the stars, Chris Perkins.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm great.
How we just got finished playing a game with D&D, where I tried desperately to kill your character.
Yes, to be continued next week when he does kill my character.
Yeah, beholders, what can you say? They're tough.
How about we start out by telling us what exactly the creative manager for D&D does?
Well, in my prestigious role here as creative manager of D&D, my job is to basically figure out whether something is good for D&D or not in terms of design. Anything that we write or that we envision in art has to be consistent with the look and feel of the brand. And that's sort of my uber goal. But my actual day-to-day work is a combination of myriad different things, meeting with lots of different people to talk about D&D projects, to create outlines, to assign work to people, to serve as a touchstone to the designers that they can rattle ideas off of, to work directly on projects that need an extra hand. Like, for instance, I'm doing some managing editing work on some things that have come through the pipeline to free up some of our managing editors' time to work on other stuff. And I'm also doing some design work on an adventure for a product that won't see the light of day until the end of 2010.
Okay. In addition to that, you are known as the Dungeon Master for the Penny Arcade and PvP podcast.
Yes.
The new Robot Chicken.
Oh my God, are those fun. Yeah. It all started with the Penny Arcade podcasts, of course, and both Tycho and Gabe, big D&D fans, and those were a special treat, mostly because Mike Krahulik had never played D&D before, so it was really an opportunity for Jerry to get him completely hooked in. So one of the mission statements of that was, get Mike hooked on D&D, and that's exactly what happened.
It's pretty common in the podcasts and videos that you are running D&D for people who have never played 4th edition and some have never played D&D at all.
Right. What always amazes me is how quickly the light sort of comes on. It doesn't take long during a session for them to kind of get it. When I was running for the Robot Chicken guys, three of them had never played before. One of them had only played up to 3.5, and one of them was pretty well versed, but the three who hadn't played before picked it up very, very quickly. I'm constantly blown away by the learning curve and how small it is.
In addition to all the normal pressures of DMing new players, you need to keep things rolling for an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any special technique you use when you're DMing for new players?
I try not to bore them. My technique is to keep the story moving. Don't get bogged down with rules explanations trying to explain the game. Just kind of throw characters into situations where they have to think and act quickly or talk quickly or engage with an NPC or do something. That gives me time. While they're struggling to solve the problem that I'm creating for them, I'm thinking ahead to the next conversation or the next thing or the next complication I'm going to introduce into the story. So just keeping things moving is pretty much the secret there.
Okay. Will Wheaton has been hinting on Twitter about a new D&D podcast. Can you say anything about that?
Can't say a heck of a lot about that, other than the fact that we sat down briefly just a couple weeks ago with the guys at Penny Arcade and with Will to talk about all the possibilities. Like, what can we do to sort of challenge expectations for the next podcast, to shake things up a bit, to surprise people? And we probably batted around about 10 or 12 different, ideas, all kinds of craziness. In some cases, podcasts tied to upcoming products that we've announced, like big releases, big things, new campaign worlds, that kind of thing. But we didn't walk away with the specific idea of what we were going to do. We're now in sort of a thinking period, all of us, and trying to figure out what would be best. I know that we've talked about swapping out a new DM in the next one, just to shake things up a bit. A couple of the guys have expressed an interest in actually taking over that role. And so that's one possibility that we've discussed.
Would you still be involved in the podcast if that happened? Would you take on a player role?
Maybe. I mean, if there was any justice, I would. That would give them a chance to avenge all the misery that I've doled out to them in the past few podcasts. But like I said, we're looking for the right thing. Whoever's involved, it will. We hope it will at least involve somebody from my team, if not me.
Okay. There's been a lack of skill challenges in your broadcast games. Is there a reason for that?
Well, the first couple podcasts, because we were still kind of learning and we didn't want to do anything too weird or out there, and the nature of the adventures we were running, we didn't really have a lot of interest in doing skill challenges at the time. In the series three podcast, I actually built a skill challenge as an option, but the characters immediately went right for the combat. They had to try to sneak past the dwarf and the dire bear companion, or convince them to let the dire boar companion, or convince them to let them inside. But they went straight for the fight. So that skill challenge actually never came to be. There is a skill challenge nestled in the Robot Chicken podcast, which was when they encounter this arcane ballista, and they have the option of either fighting it and destroying it, or taking control of it. And the skill challenge is all about the taking control, and that's what Dan Milano's wizard character tries to do amid the combat. And so it's a skill challenge nestled within a combat, and those are my favorite skill challenges, because there's the option of doing one or the other.
How would you describe the Chris Perkins style of DMing?
Mean. My style is to kind of layer my adventures. I constantly bring back things that happened earlier in the campaign. My goal is to also create character moments where things that characters do or things that are done to characters come back and resonate later in the campaign. Like in a particular example that happened tonight in our game, for instance, way back several levels ago in the campaign, one of the characters was basically taken down by Mind Flayers. But rather than killed, they basically stuck this little slug to his head. And it was like they were, implanting something or sucking something out of his mind. I didn't know exactly at the time for sure what I wanted that slug to do, but later on, many levels and many sessions later, when the Mind Flayers returned, they were able to take advantage of that and basically teleport the character away from his companions to kind of deal with him separately because of the little embryo that they planted in his brain. I like to plant those seeds early and then take advantage of them later, because that's always fun.
Not so literal.
I'm rarely that literal. The other thing I like to do is to... because of the nature of the campaign that I'm running now, where often you have like one big fight instead of like five or six small fights, I like to layer in encounters and have these sort of rolling encounters where you're in the middle of one and then another one kind of gets triggered, either by the actions of the characters or by the actions of the NPCs around them. It creates for very kind of set piece like movie scale battles, which are nice to have. It kind of ups the stakes, particularly at the Paragon level. The other thing I like to do is throw minions by the gallon loads. I have no fear of throwing 20 or 30 minions on the table if I have the minis for them, because the characters can just eat them up, and they're like popcorn to me, they're like popcorn to you, they're just great. And they fill up a battlefield, and they make the battle look larger than it in fact is. And it always feels good to take out a minion. It feels like your character's always doing something. Finally, the other thing I like to do is have multi-level battles. That is, not play out battles on a single plane, but to have high ground, low ground, balconies, pits, chasms, all kinds of things where characters can get pushed into, pushed over, pushed onto. That, to me, creates a much more interesting terrain.
I noticed a lot of your style seems to evolve around combat, but in our game, at least one of every four sessions about has no combat in it.
Yeah. Role-playing is a big deal for me, and anybody who says that 4th edition doesn't have role-playing opportunities in it are just being dumb. You put in as much role-playing as you want to. I like to have lots of role-playing between characters, even in the midst of combat. The players bring a lot of role-playing to the game already, just interactions between each other, but I... I'd like to flavor my campaigns with very rich NPCs whose motives aren't always clearly along the lines of good and evil, who can be swayed, who can be turned. In the case of a recent game, we had a bad guy who was so severely beaten by the characters that he ultimately surrendered and might, in fact, turn out to be someone who could eventually, if not be an ally, at least somebody who might actually help the characters in some fashion down the road, only by the sheer virtue of the fact that the characters chose not to kill him. I want to reward that with some sort of future role-playing game interaction, if things work out.
How do you foster role-playing in players who aren't necessarily familiar with it?
I talk in a lot of voices. I try to get into the NPCs and actually speak in their voice, and often that seems to encourage players to respond in kind. They begin to respond instead of saying, well, my character says this. They just begin talking in the voice of their character as if we're just having a face-to-face conversation. It's a very simple tactic.
Can we get a sample of your voices?
Well, let's see. I had a tiefling once that talked in a very bad New York accent. And he was all kind of butch, like this. And he never really, you know, liked to say a lot during combat. But when he did, he spoke emphatically. And always with lots of threats. And then, by the way, any voice that I do is like some completely trash ripoff of some Futurama episode that I probably saw 2 years ago. I don't really have any new voices. But occasionally, I'll say something, and it'll just come out in a strange voice. And I don't necessarily know when I'm saying it out until I decide, like 3 seconds before I start talking, what it's going to be. And lots of hissing, like evil villain voices that hiss like this. I also like to mix up cadence a lot, or to do just weird things with language. Like, you guys met a character who was this chronomancer, half-elf guy, who occasionally talks with an extra word in the sentence. It's just this sort of little time stutter that he gets when he speaks. And it's very subtle, it's very easy to do, and it sort of sets him apart from any other characters that the party has met.
Yeah, I've noticed it's helpful to me because we run into a lot of NPCs, and even if I don't remember their names, as soon as you start talking, I know
the secret actual NPC is really just coming up with one thing for that NPC. It doesn't always have to be verbal. It can be a visual hook to the NPC. It can be a tone in the way they talk. It could be a way that they walk. But there's like every NPC kind of needs one thing to sort of hang the hat on, so that you as a DM remember what that character is all about. You know, whether it's a character with a cat, or whether it's a drow who speaks in a Jamaican type accent, or whether it's a character with a stutter. Any one thing is usually enough for the DM, for me, to remember what the character is all about.
But as you say that, I know every one of those characters from your game, just from that one hook that you gave them.
Yeah.
You have a reputation as a brutal DM that accumulates
yes.
PC deaths.
Yes. I'm not afraid of death. It gives, if nothing else, it gives the players the opportunity to think about new characters, or it gives me opportunities to have the characters raised, but then sort of with some kind of hidden price or something, a buried cost. Sometimes I'm doing the players a favor. Like, I've been there's one character in my Wednesday night group who, he was created very early in the campaign and was not really that optimized. And we're getting to the level now where he's pretty much getting the shit kicked out of him constantly. And so the player, Kurt, was really looking forward to finding a gracious way to get the character out of the picture, or just finding an opportunity, a natural way for the character to kind of leave the combat. And he was able to do that through death. He had died, I think, 3 times within 4 sessions. And there was this ongoing bit with him having this rivalry with the Raven Queen and constantly denying her this prize. Eventually, he sort of relents and bows to the fact that he can't really escape her clutches for the last time. And that created an interesting character moment I think Kurt felt that that death was earned. But usually I'm just a bastard. I like to create counters that aren't necessarily balanced. I've got most of my parties are larger than normal, so it's very hard for me to necessarily anticipate whether I'm being too tough on the characters. So I'm just happy to break them over the coals. They never cease to surprise me with their resilience, and they got lots of healing at their disposal. You guys are tough to kill. I'll say that.
So is there any effort behind the screen to not kill us?
I never cheat die rolls. I always play them straight. I let the chips fall where they may. I let the dice fall where they may. And if that means that the party gets butchered, and I feel like maybe that encounter was way above their level, there's usually some way, story-wise, to extricate myself without coming across as artifice.
Okay. Anyone who's looked at your campaign wiki on the community site can tell that you put a ton of work into your games and playing.
Yes. I am constantly thinking about my campaign. I'm thinking about my campaign right now. I'm thinking about next week right now. So
I try to stay ahead. Do you think it's possible to over-prepare?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I learned pretty early on that I don't want to spend all of my energy focused in sort of one area in the hopes that the characters will go there. I've seen instances where games kind of collapse because the DM does all this preparation that's very kind of narrowly focused, and then if the characters take a detour and they don't go to that part of the dungeon or that part of the campaign world, the DM has nothing. I try to spread my creative energy out and develop a lot of things simultaneously. I don't spend a lot of time building unique stat blocks if I can get away with it. I try to use existing stat blocks. All that sort of micro stuff. Sometimes I'll yank a map that I think is appropriate instead of create one myself. It's not always possible, but sometimes it is. I save myself time on those small things to spend most of my time thinking about the bigger things. The arcs, the main villains, doing unique stats for them, lair configurations, coming up with nice, cool bases, things like that.
Okay.
I also got pretty smart with this campaign because it's a very nautical campaign. I can build like a finite number of ships and use those same ships over and over and over again for a variety of different engagements. So that was a matter that didn't occur to me at the time I created the campaign. I could save a lot of work that way, but it turned out well.
Yeah, well, realistically, there would only be a few ship designs.
Exactly. And like, for instance, where you guys are now in the campaign, which is this town called Anchordown, this sort of floating community on the ocean, it's made of all of these ships basically slammed together. So I went into Photoshop, took a bunch of the digital maps that I had created for the individual ships and just broke them up into pieces and stuck them together to create this hybrid Uber map, which I could lay out on the table. It actually turned out pretty well. It's a little hard to read, but the whole place is a jumble, it saved me a hell of a lot of work.
Now you have a really cool, unique-looking map that didn't take you much extra
effort. Exactly.
Hey, do you have any final thoughts for our viewers?
Final thoughts? I have very few thoughts, in general. Let's see. Since we're on the topic of campaigns and whatnot, I found out recently that there's a guy on our community who is starting up his own Iomandra campaign.
Yes.
And has actually started to create his own Iomandra wiki. And so that kind of blew me away. I've never had that happen before. So all of that, I guess, we owe to the community. And I hope to see more campaign wikis from other people in their own campaigns all over the webs.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And I'll see you next week.
Yeah.
When I kill your character.